What's up, y'all? I'm just popping in for a moment here because while the Millennial Rewatcher is now the Rewind, I just wanted to revisit some of my favorite episodes. I thought it might be fun to take a look back at what movies I've already covered, my favorites, and just talk a little bit about that experience, rewatching the movies, making the episode, and then parts of the episode that I loved the most. If you don't know, the Millennial Rewatcher is getting a little bit of a rebrand. I will be moving forward with having more guest hosts. There might be times here and there where it's just me, but my hope is, and my goal is, that for each episode I will have a co-host, because part of the reason why I decided to rebrand is because I really love doing this with another host, and I feel like it works better for doing movie recaps. And while I feel like I have done a great job doing these episodes on my own, I'm not sure if it's translating to the general public. And I just felt like it was time for a change, not just for the podcast, but for myself as well. So that's really the biggest reason why I was like, okay, I still do recaps because I don't want to scrap it all together, but let's make it a little different. The Rewind will officially premiere July 5th. Episodes will still be every other week at this point. I am starting another podcast called Isn't She Fictional? And I was originally going to premiere that on April 17th, but some plans have changed. I don't really feel comfortable saying what that looks like yet, but the show is very much still coming. I just don't have a date at this point, but I'm still hard at work on it. It's still gonna be so fucking good. I'm having a grand time picking out books that I want to recommend, finding topics to pair with them. If you're not familiar with the concept of Isn't She Fictional, that's really what it is. Is each episode you get a book recommendation. I might talk about it a smidge, but I'm calling it a recommendation because I'm not trying to get into a big book discussion about it, because it is just me hosting it, and I'm not interested in that on my own. Also, some of the books that I'm recommending are books that I've read, you know, X amount of time ago, meaning it could be a year, a couple of years, a few years, and my recall isn't going to be the best to actually have a discussion. So while it's something I would still recommend, I'm not comfortable having a discussion on it at all the time. And then I find a topic that's related in some way, inspired by an element, character, the book in its entirety, and tell you about it, teach you about it. Maybe I shouldn't say this because it might deter some people, but I almost kind of feel like I'm giving a lesson on a topic. But it's fun. My weird humor is there, me stumbling over myself because I'll never get over that. But it's also informative and I guess kind of educational, but in a way that is palatable and fun, and it doesn't feel like you're sitting in the classroom, I promise. And books have always been a huge part of my life, so incorporating that into a podcast is just a pleasure for me. What a fucking treat. Anyways, I will give more information on that as soon as I have it, but just know that it is still happening, even though it didn't premiere April 17th. For this episode, I really just wanted to kind of do a look back at some of my favorite episodes. The Millennial Rewatcher has been around for about a year now. I started this podcast because after my late diagnosis of neurodivergence, I started to be able to watch some films that, while I loved them so much, I would have a panic attack of sorts thinking about rewatching them, trying to rewatch them. I physically couldn't make myself do it, and I honestly still don't fully understand that, but I do understand more now, even more so than I did when I first started doing this about a year ago, that I have such, part of the reason why I have such intense feelings around certain films is because I used those films and characters to cope when I was growing up. So I formed these really intense attachments to the film, the actors, actresses, the characters, locations, whatever, because it was a coping mechanism for me. It helped me get through some very traumatic experiences and then continued to kind of be that safe space for me. My first episode was Dirty Dancing, and that is the episode I would like to start with because it's still one of my favorite episodes. I did go and listen back to parts of it, and it's a little rough. The audio is a little rough here and there. I can tell that I was feeling awkward and uncomfortable and a little unsure what to do as far as recapping an episode. Is this okay? Because it's just me blabbing my mouth off into a mic. I was sitting in my closet for that episode. I was holding my mic, so some of the audio quality is still weird because I was like moving it around a little bit, and I could tell I was kind of uncomfortable, but I feel like I learned a lot about myself rewatching that movie, which sounds weird to say because it's a fucking movie, but I did. I mean, I had a fun time, but some things I wish I would have done more is incorporate the music of the movie a little bit more. My editing skills were still kind of choppy and a bitch is still learning. It's not like it's excellent now, but I've gotten better and I've kind of figured out my flow. So honestly, I don't know, maybe Dirty Dancing is a movie I would like to revisit and recap with someone in the future because I feel like I could do it better. But at the same time, with the intention I had for the Millennial Rewatcher, That was very much there. Let's go ahead and play a clip. Let's actually jump into this movie. So what gets me in the feels and connected to this movie immediately is the cars and the music. I wanna bet you everything, all right, cause I'm a dope man. Because the opening scene, it's Baby and her family flying down the highway to Kellerman's. You see Baby in the backseat of their 1960s car with the actual 1980s wind in her hair. And then there's the music. The opening notes to this feature film, Dirty Dancing! I can't lie, though, when Baby says that opening line, when everyone called me Baby, and it never occurred to me to care. Or mind. Maybe she says mind. I don't know if it's the way she delivers it or just the line itself, but it makes me cringe. And it takes me out of it for a second, and then I'm put right back in as the music continues, and they get to Kellerman's, and there's definitely an immediate line in the sand between the staff and the guests. Yes, they are there as paid guests. However, that doesn't mean you've all of a sudden got the superiority or elitism to lord over someone as if they're your fucking their servant. They're still a human being. They deserve to be treated fairly and not like they're lesser than you. But that's how the staff is very much regarded. And that precedence is set by Max Kellerman. He's the owner, operator, all of that. He's everywhere, eyes on everything. And I hate him. I'm not gonna lie. I hate Max Kellerman. But there's this part in the beginning that I remember watching when I was much younger. I can't tell you the first time I watched this movie. I really don't remember. But I was much younger. Okay, I was born in 90. This came out in 87. So whenever I first encountered this movie, I was pretty young. But I remember not even thinking twice about Baby's dad, Jake, kind of admonishing and lording over Lisa's complaint of having not brought a certain pair of shoes after she sees a cute boy, who we learn is Robbie. His name's Robbie. Upon arrival, because they're unloading the cars, and she sees Robbie, and she's like, oh, I should have brought this pair of shoes. And then immediately, Jake swoops in and, like, starts naming things that are obviously more important and meant to definitely diminish how she's, not just how she's feeling, but what she's worried about. Baby chimes in, and they both start, they're just both naming things that are so much more important than being bummed you didn't bring a pair of shoes. And well, on one hand, the things they're naming categorically, they are more pressing and more dire and much more of a crisis. They're still belittling Lisa for how she feels about something she never claimed was more important than famine and war. The immediate need to come in with a belittling of what she finds to be a problem for herself in that moment, it comes off as very superior, elitist, and honestly, even kind of sexist behavior that annoys me to my soul. I think one of the things I really enjoyed about doing Dirty Dancing was I loved learning about Baby and Johnny, the actors behind the scenes, and how their personal feelings influenced how things were shot, their chemistry on screen. So, like, the behind the scenes facts when they're practicing that dance bit where Johnny runs his fingers down Baby's side and she keeps laughing and giggling because it tickles. And that was an outtake. That wasn't in the original script, but it worked so well in editing that they incorporated those outtakes into the movie. So the look of annoyance that crosses over Johnny's face, that's actually just Patrick, because they've been doing this and she's not supposed to be ticklish, but like, it's ticklish. And listen, you can't not be ticklish all of a sudden. You can't just not be. It's a very endearing thing to me. I loved learning that. And it's so much more than just that scene, if you listen to the episode, but that particular scene and that particular fact is one that my mind will escape back to every now and then, and it'll just give me a little happy. We jump into baby learning to dance, and I absolutely adore the progression that you see of her learning to dance. It's like, as she's learning this dance, she's finding a part of herself that she didn't have access to before, this confidence, this her true voice, not the voice that she thinks the world wants to hear or that will make her dad happy, like who she really is.
Ow. My fault.
2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 4, don't lean back, lifting up, 2, 3, 4, shoulders down, 2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 4, again, concentrate, and...
And then, of course, there's the music of it all, the way the music makes you feel, the culmination of Baby and Johnny's relationship on and off screen, it's sort of coming full circle for their characters and the actors themselves by the end of filming, that part in the ending scene where Johnny mouths the words, "And I owe it all to you." Oh, just straight through the heart. They didn't have an off-screen romance because, remember, Patrick was married. So it wasn't that they ended up having a relationship in that way outside of the film, but they became friends. They formed a bond and an appreciation for one another that's reflected by the end of the movie. Oh, and then, you know, laughing at Slime Weasel Neil. I enjoy that too greatly. That's still a good time. And if you don't remember, Neil is Max Kellerman's nephew who works for him, and he tries to get all up in Baby's business, but you know, Baby, she kind of entertains it out of being polite. She feels like she's supposed to, but he's so yucky, creme de la creme of cringe.
I love to watch your hair blowing in the breeze.
Maybe my parents are looking for me.
Baby, don't worry. If they think you're with me, they'll be the happiest parents at Kellerman's. I have to say it. I'm known as the catch of the county.
I'm sure you are.
But last week, I took a girl away from Jamie, the lifeguard.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to her, right in front of me, "What does he have that I don't have?" And she said, "Two hotels."
That is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard.
My next all-time favorite out of my episodes. It was kind of hard to narrow these down, but there were some that I automatically knew. This was one of my favorite episodes. Lake Placid. This is one of my favorite episodes that I did. Mostly because that movie, listen, it's not, what is the word I'm looking for? I guess it's not like categorically a standout in its genre. It's not necessarily some amazing film, but it's fucking hilarious for what it is. It's a creature feature. It's about a big ass crocodile that ends up in a lake in Maine, which makes zero sense, but yet it's there. And, you know, things go haywire from there. But this movie is hilarious. Bill Pullman is here, Betty White, Oliver Platt. You know, there's other names now that, of course, I can't remember their name, but this episode, my episode on Lake Placid, it's just one that's, it was easy to talk about. I hardly need to reflect because this episode was so much fun, because a lot of this film really does crack me up in its absurdity. At some points, you know, you're like, this is just bad writing, maybe some bad acting, But not all together. I mean, Oliver Platt is a standout for me because, well, I'm an Oliver Platt fan. But he plays his character of... He studies crocodiles for a living, okay? He has his degree in something major, I don't remember. But he chases crocodiles and studies them for a living. And he's just all about the croc. All about that croc, no gator. Probably both. But anyways, this movie's about crocodiles. And this is when we meet Hector. He makes his grand entrance.
Who are you?
Hector Sear. I said it once. Let me know when it sinks in, okay? Have you seen it, mister?
No.
Excuse me. You came here to help you find it.
A crocodile.
Yeah. They've been migrating north, you know. This lake does connect to the ocean. It's not as far-fetched as it may sound.
Crocodiles can't swim in salt water.
Yeah, well, that'll be your little secret.
So Hector is a mythology professor with a special interest in crocodiles. Basically, he chases them to study them. Again, he's played by Oliver Platt. I fucking love Oliver Platt. I do adore. Sir Oliver Platt, I adore you. I find him endearing in general. I think he's handsome. He's funny. I love what he brings to the characters he plays. There's just something about Oliver Platt that I feel drawn to this dude, the characters he plays. Yeah, Hector, the character he plays in this movie, he's in love with the chase of the croc. This is also the episode where I started to feel like I was getting a little better at editing. Not tremendously. I did re-listen to that one a little bit as well. And there's things that I would do differently now, maybe in the placement of things, you know, where I insert certain clips and transitions. But I feel like I started to have more fun with editing in this episode. Like I was able to give myself a little more permission to do that. And by doing so, experimenting, things like that, you know, I started to learn more. I feel like I let my instincts take over a bit here, and that was just a lot of fun for me. It felt a little freeing, and I felt very proud of it. So I still feel very proud of my Lake Placid episode, even though it's one of my earlier ones. Beginning of this movie, we meet Sheriff Hank and a diver from Fish and Wildlife, not Jack, not Bill Pullman's character yet. Different guy. Didn't catch his name. Sorry. That's a bunch of sound real insensitive when I tell you what happens to him. So yeah, he's out on Black Lake. A Fish and Wildlife dude is about to conduct a search under the sheriff's guide and I guess sort of supervision, more like help. But anyways, so the diver, he goes under and he's under the water for a little bit while Sheriff Hank, who doesn't want to fucking be there, he looks cranky as shit. He's just chilling and eating a Twinkie, listening to...
And right in the middle of a good dream, like all at once I wake up from something that keeps knocking at my brain. Before I go insane, I hold my pillow to my head and spring up in my bed, screaming out the words I dread. I think I love you.
It's spooky croc-ooky under the water. The diver finds what I believe is a nest. He kind of pokes. He finds the nest, but then he pokes his head back out from, you know, where he had like swam up into to get to the nest and checks his surroundings. I think he thought he might have heard something. I don't know exactly how that would work underwater. But anyways, it's just a fucking turtle. It was a cute turtle. He feels like he's safe enough to go back up into this nest. He's not. So he gets attacked. He makes it to the surface of the water somehow, even though he's still being just like flung about like a little diver rag doll by our creature. They don't know it's a crocodile yet. It's this mysterious thing in the water. No one's actually had a solid sighting of it yet. He comes out of the water screaming, scares the shit out of Sheriff Hank and his fucking Twinkie. The attack goes on for a little bit, and then he pops out of the water again right at the boat. Like I said, there are some things now that I would change, but I think for what it is, it's still a standout episode that makes me happy. And I mean, listen, again, at the end of the day, this film is a million times better because Betty White is here. Our croc villainess, hilariously Betty White, in all her glory. Sheriff Hank, he confronts who I am now calling leader of the crocs, Betty White. They find out she's been feeding it for 6 years. Hank asks her,
"Your husband burned, you didn't by any chance lead him to the lake blindfolded?"
"If I had a dick, this is where I'd tell you to suck it."
My third choice, my third pick. This one was an easy choice as well. Mermaids.
Wow.
Yeah, mermaids. This was a little bit more of a recent episode. I did it after the holidays. To me, mermaids is probably, if I had a top 25, I'd never put one together, but if I made a top 25 favorite movies list, I think this would be on that list. It's not a top 5, maybe not a top 10. I don't know. I'd have to think about that some more. But this movie has always been one that stood the test of time for me. And while I don't think it's actually one of my really big attachment movies, like Dirty Dancing, for example, there's something about it that, I don't know, I really connect with. I think it's the struggle between Rachel and Charlotte. Sorry, I was forgetting like the characters' names for a second. Rachel is played by Cher, and she plays Winona Ryder's mother, and Winona Ryder plays Charlotte. She's a 16-year-old. She has a younger sister, half-sister, played by Christina Ricci, but now I'm forgetting the character's name. God, you think I just said I love this movie, but I forget names easily. But anyways, my point is, I think what draws me into this movie is the relationships between these women. So that mother-daughter struggle at that age of being 16 and, you know, being a teenager is fucking hard, but being a parent is also fucking hard. And Rachel is a much different kind of parent for the 1960s, which makes this whole movie just even more of a standout for me, because it's not, you're definitely not seeing your typical 1960s mom. Rachel kind of rages against that norm, that character does. And I have an affinity for that feeling and desire to go against the norm as well, because I don't know, that's just always something I've felt akin to. But then, you know, just like Dirty Dancing, there's the music and the cars, because I don't think I talked about this in the Dirty Dancing portion of this episode, but I love me a vintage car. And Rachel drives this great vintage fucking car with the white top, and it's this light vintage pink. It almost reminds me of a station wagon, but I don't know the terminology. I couldn't tell you what kind of car this is. I just know that I fucking love it. And I wish I drove around town in something like this. That would just be stellar. Let's jump into the movie recap portion of this fucking episode.
My sister Kate learned to swim when most babies were still gnawing the sides of their playpens. I adore her. Everybody does. The day she was born, I wanted to name her after St. Gobnet, the virgin beekeeper. But mother, Mrs. Flax, thought I was a little peculiar. I don't agree.
So Charlotte is our sort of narrator for the film. So she speaks a lot, you know, over what's happening. And it opens up at a kid's swim meet, Kate's swim meet. The swim meet starts. She's off. She's fast as hell. Kid Christina Ricci, butterfly stroke flying towards the screen. It's 1963. Kate wins her match. We'll see that Kate always wins. She's an exceptional swimmer and obsessed with being in the water. We see Charlotte and Kate at home after the match. It's later that night. Kate's got her trophy in her lap. Charlotte and her mom, Rachel, are incredibly different, but also the same in a lot of ways. But Charlotte is constantly rebelling against being anything like her mom.
Mrs. Flax doesn't believe in ritual or tradition. But I'd wanted to repent since the first time I saw a girl with ashes on her forehead cross herself and chant Hail Marys before a spelling bee.
I mean, she's not just rebelling against being anything like her mom. She's rebelling against living life the way that her mom has not only dictated and chosen for them, but even through religion. They're Jewish, but Charlotte is super obsessed with Christianity. Rachel's moved these kids 18 times, okay? Charlotte's only 15, and they've moved 18 times. That's a lot. That's a lot of moving, all right? Rachel gets involved with men she shouldn't, and when things go sour, they move. Essentially, Rachel just kind of rebels against the norm, especially the 1960 norms placed on women by society. Ew. And honestly, religion is kind of the perfect way to be nothing like Charlotte's mom. This film is hilarious, infuriating, sad, curious, and magnanimous at the same time. And each character, again, has something that I at least warm up to and understand and need to know more about. And I think in that sense, it offers something to relate to at any age that you watch this, whether it be young me when I first discovered this movie or me now, you know, closer to Rachel's age. Anyways, I did buy the book it was adapted from to make the movie, which is of the same title, Mermaids. I haven't finished it, but I did start reading it, and bitch, in the episode, I talk a lot about how Charlotte's character, she's 15 years old, and she has this huge fucking crush on Joe. He's kind of like this neighborhood handyman guy. He works at the convent up the hill from them, but he also drives a school bus and he does a lot of odd jobs around town. And he is a dreamboat to Charlotte. She has this huge teenage crush on him. In the movie, Joe is 26 years old and Charlotte is 15 years old. But in the book, Joe is 29 and she's 14. This is even worse. Sure, it was the early 60s, but I still kind of raged over that because I'm like, y'all, your 15-year-old should not be dating a 26-year-old man. No, never, not at any point. The age gap was even worse in the novel. And I just wanted to include that before playing a clip for you. They're running some errands, checking out the town. When they get home, there's a man waiting for them outside.
I just wondered if you got moved in all right.
Yeah, we got moved in fine.
My name's Joe Peretti. I work up the hill. So if you need anything done, ma'am.
And in walks Joe Peretti. He's some sort of handyman. He has a lot of different jobs around town. He's 26 years old, 1963 handsome, and he's looking for work. Charlotte is instantly taken with Mr. Joe Peretti. Jump on my Yeti. I guess his dick is the Yeti here. Anyways, Joe also works on the grounds at the convent just up the hill. Also happens to be their nearest neighbors.
This is a sign. Thank you, God. This is a real sign.
Our nearest neighbors are nuns? I suppose you think this is divine providence.
I wasn't sure how many top whatever selects, top episodes that I was going to pick. I ended up wanting to include Twister because this truly has become one of my favorite episodes, but it was also the last movie I did under my original name. So it feels like a bit of an ending to me, even though I hadn't planned to stop at that episode, but that's how it worked out. Twister hadn't been one of my big all-time favorite attachment movies, but revisiting it ended up feeling like I had more of an attachment to it now than I did back whenever I first watched it, because that movie came out in 96. But I don't know what it is, but I think I have a whole new appreciation and love for the movie Twister, which I wasn't expecting. That was a surprise. Putting together the movie facts and getting into how Twisters form, like an actual Twister, the science behind it, I was Bill Nye the Science Guy for a moment, and that made me super happy. For a tornado to form, there also needs to be spinning air near the ground. This happens when air in the storm sinks to the ground and spreads out across it in gusts. Gusts of warmer air rise and gusts of cooler air sink as they blow across the land. If there is enough rising air and sinking gusts, the air near the ground starts spinning. You know why I think I enjoy this right now? I feel like fucking Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
But I also feel like this episode is sort of representative of what I want the rewind to be moving forward. Even though it was only me recapping Twister, and I do plan on having rotating hosts for the rewind, the fun I had with this film is what I want to carry into the rewind. And while some of the films we cover in the future might require a more serious tone, I still want our episodes to be a good time. Something that feels fun and reminiscent and nostalgic, entertaining, but thoughtful at the same time. And with that, enjoy this clip of my episode on Twister. All right. I love how this film I love how this film opens because there's a stormy sky. There's a storm a-brewing. It feels very ominous. We see that we're in June of 1969. There's various shots of different scenery as the sky gets real angry and this storm is building. We're in Oklahoma. We cut to a house. We learn it is Joe's childhood home. She lives there with her mom and her dad. It's a little bit later in the day. She's already in bed. And we see a weather report playing on the TV. A man, her dad, he's sipping coffee as the storm takes over. And he's watching the news. He says something about like it being a possible F5, which is like the worst of NATO's, okay? Joe's mom is getting Joe out of bed. She's just a little girl. She's so tiny. And the three of them, Ma, Pa, and Joe, head to the storm cellar because the NATO be coming. Also, tell me why they left the fucking dog. Oh, this is another, has to be another reference to The Wizard of Oz because this dog looks like Toto. It is small and fluffy like Toto. It be a Toto dog.
Toto? I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
But for real, I got so incensed when I was like, wait a minute, why the fuck is the dog still on the bed? That is your family member. That dog is handheld size. Pick it up. Joe is screaming for Toby. That's the dog's name. Toby. Toby starts running after them. He's like, bitch, don't leave me behind. Y'all are rude as shit. I know they're in a panic and it's 3 minutes. They've gotten the warning that a tornado is coming for them. They got 3 minutes, right? But still, that dog was on that child's bed. Scoop it up. Scoop it up. After doing my episode with my mom and then going back to doing an episode where it was just me recapping and hosting, well, I had an amazing time putting Twister together and I had fun recording it. And I think it's a great episode. Like I said, I was just talking about, it's become one of my favorites. There was something about going from doing an episode with my mom, having another host and seeing what we created and then going back to doing it alone that just really helped it land home for me that I just don't want to do this anymore on my own. I know I already said that, but I wanted to include one of my favorite clips from my episode with my mom. And again, we did Ever After, A Cinderella Story. That is one of my all-time favorite movies. That is one that I did have a hard time revisiting and I wasn't able to watch it for a really long time. I felt like a dagger through the heart thinking about watching it, which I know probably makes zero fucking sense over the waves? Over the audio waves, I formed some intense attachments to things. And I think a part of it was I was worried that even if I wasn't conscious of it, I think I was also worried that revisiting it now, knowing what I know about myself, simply just being older, might change the way it originally made me feel. And for me, it was those feelings it gave me that was the biggest part of the bond I had with them, movies and characters, locations and such, that helped me cope and helped me feel better. So I think that was a part of it too. But anyways, I didn't mean to go off on that, but here we are. I had the absolute best fucking time doing that ever after episode with my mom. And that's what I really want, is to be able to create episodes where there is two of us. It's not just me spouting off on my shit, but there is someone I can carry on a conversation with, talk about the movies and where they bring our brains and the feelings and emotions and real world things that comes up. And you know, it's a two-sided conversation instead of just fucking me. I just want to play a clip for you from that episode real quick. We see Marguerite and the Baroness with the Queen. They told the Queen some lie about Marguerite's black eye because now she has a full-on bruised eyeball. Something about saving a baby from a runaway horse. Marguerite would never think twice about saving anyone but herself.
No,
so
not at all. No.
The Queen is saying, I'm sorry, my son can't join us. He's disappeared again. She says he was gone all last night and he's off again. Fuck! Then the Queen says, perhaps you can solve a mystery for me. What she was saying about Henry being gone all night already kind of sparked the Baroness's inquisitiveness and maybe puzzling things together.
Yeah, her detective skills were
her ears
on
perk
high
up.
Alert. Absolutely.
Her horns perk up. But then the Queen asks them if they know who
the contest Nicole de Lancret is.
And this is when, yeah, you really see the pieces fall into place in the Baroness's head. Because she says, yes, I do know her. She's staying with us. And then she turns to Marguerite and says, isn't that right, darling? And then she says,
whom you like to call Cinderella?
Yeah, and then Marguerite fucking loses it.
Good heavens, child. Are you all right?
There was a bee.
This scene is just as brilliant. The way she gets up and has her little tantrum.
She walks off a little distance.
Oh, she does. And then she just completely loses her shit.
And I'm like, they can still see you.
I know. The look on the queen's face, like, who just possessed your body?
Yeah,
what the fuck
she's
just
all of
happened?
A sudden not sure of her safety, perhaps?
Uh-huh, which she should be considering that at this point. Absolutely.
It reminds me of that. Morning. Did I ever tell you this story where I woke up with a bee in my hair?
Yes, I do recall
little bitch
that.
A bitch stung me. Uh-huh. I woke up. It crawled back up. So I'm looking in the mirror like, what happened? I laid back down. I don't remember if I got up again or if I felt something. But anyways, I eventually got back up again and it crawled out. And I was like, so you've just been in there?
Uh-huh.
And then stung me. And then it was clinging to my hair for dear life as I was screaming my head off. Also, I don't know why my instinct was to strip, because why would that help? It's in my hair.
There might be
on
more.
On my head. I know.
They may have come.
I took my shirt off.
It's a group, you know?
When I was out, I was like, why did I take my shirt off?
Because it's a potty and there might be a few stragglers
left over. You
know what
was even better about that? That's when Shanae was living with me and our bathroom's kind of like, there was one wall, like little wall that my bathroom shared with hers.
Yeah.
And right on the other side of the wall was her toilet and she was in the middle of taking a dump.
Oh my God.
And she heard me screaming. So she's like, yeah, all right. And I'm like, I'm not all right. But she had to finish her business. So she did not come to my help. She was like, well, I must carry on. I don't blame her.
Poor Shanae. Oh, my God.
Side quest taking us back on track. All right.
There was a bee.
All right, y'all. Thank you for hanging out with me for a little bit as I revisit some of my favorite episodes from the Millennial Rewatcher, which is now officially The Rewind. Everything has been changed on social media, so you can now find us at The Rewind. My username on Instagram is Rewinding Podcast, which is growing on me. At first it was that because like anything else I was trying was already taken. And then Instagram glitched out and was like, try again in a few minutes. And it was like that for a day. I was like, fine. So eventually I typed in Rewinding Podcast. It's Rewinding _ podcast, but I don't know. It's growing on me. I kind of like it. So you can find us there. Our new season will officially start July 5th. Look out for that. Until then, follow our socials. Feel free to check out all of my old episodes, which will be available. It just reads season one. And then I included the original artwork for the Millennial Rewatcher in those episodes. I don't know if it's like this for everyone or just me, but if you listen on Apple, the main artwork, I can't get it to update. So the name is The Rewind, but the podcast art, if you're listening through Apple, like the main art, it might still be the old one. So apologies. I really don't know how to fix it. I've looked it up and it was kind of confusing for me. So if anyone knows how to fix that, let me know. I don't have an updated email for you. So for now, it's still millennialrewatcher@gmail.com. I have so many emails. I don't want to make another one, but I suppose I probably should. I wish I could just update the name. But anyways, thanks for being here, guys. Thanks for listening. If you have a movie suggestion, feel free to DM that on Instagram. Or send it to that old email, millennialrewatcher@gmail.com. I will be creating a master list of recommended movies that we will from time to time go to and sort of just randomly pick and do an episode like that. So if you'd like to make that suggestion, again, just go to Instagram or send an email. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.